The Northampton Arts Council is presenting a special film presentation of the documentary I Am Big Bird, The Carol Spinney Story, on Friday, February 12th at the Academy of Music Theater in Northampton. The film will be followed by a Q&A session at which Spinney, his wife Deborah, and a very special guest will be discussing their journey and answering questions. The documentary chronicles the life of Carol Spinney, the man who has been Sesame Street's Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch since 1969. For over four decades, his characters have been cherished by generations of children and adults. I Am Big Bird features incredible footage of Spinney's earliest collaborations with Jim Henson as it traces his journey from bullied child to celebrated performer. To find out more about the film and the event and his life, we welcome Carol Spinney back to the roundtable this morning. What a great honor and pleasure to have you back on the program, sir. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. My pleasure.
At what point was it, did it come to you, and whose idea was it ultimately to do a documentary?
Well, it was the documentary guy, Three Men Make Up the Copper Pot Pictures, and they had just completed very successfully a very nice documentary called Red Dirt. I can never think of the whole title. It's a very clever title. It was about children in Africa who had been through a war, and children who they matched them up with pen pals in Brooklyn Stuyvesant. So it was very interesting, and they eventually built the Copper Pot Pictures, built them a beautiful school. They were having a school classes under a tree, which was not reliable weather. You know.
Right.
So they needed another project to work on, and so somebody suggested to Dave LaMattina, who is the director and head producer and writer, they suggested, why don't you do Carol Spinney? He said, who's that? And they told him what I do, and he said, well, that sounds interesting, so they approached Sesame Street, who liked the idea, and they then approached me. And we liked them, and so I was quite, Deb and I, my wife Deborah, we were surprised. I said, I don't think I had that interesting a life to make a film about. But I was wrong, I think, because we agreed to do it, and they made a beautiful film.
Do you like the idea that when you say the name Carol Spinney, people may not know immediately that they're talking about Big Bird and Oscar? Do you like that anonymity?
Well, now that we've gone come out, I've never done very much photography of ourselves, and we've had interviews like this other times, other places. But because I'm not the one, it's a memorable show, Sesame Street. On the other hand, it's not like being on prime time. I was kind of used to not being a big star, and I don't need to be. I'm really devoted to making these characters come to life. And Big Bird turned out to be a very complex individual who was able to help a lot of children through their childhood.
When you talk about the complexity of Big Bird, what makes Big Bird complex? It's addressed in the documentary that early on this character was kind of a local yokel, and then
That didn't last long because as we got into the scripts and they learned more, the writers learned more who Big Bird was and what he's like, they started writing more sensitive stuff. That was within the first 2 months. I think he should be a child, not a country yokel who happens to be hanging around the street in the city. That idea was immediately agreed upon. So I lightened up the voice over a measure of about a week. Big Bird's voice is pretty much my voice, except I go a lot higher, and I get sounding like this, pretty much. Huh. And here I am. La, la, la.
But it is a very specific, even a specific age of a child, but pretty much a four to five-year-old child.
Well, when he started, he couldn't read or write, so I decided he was four and a half. But within a year, he was saying, making up little funny poems and which were little bits on the show. And I said, I think we've his next birthday he'll be 6 years old, and ever since then his birthdays he's 6 years old. we needed him to stay a child, not grow up and have to join the military or go to college or something.
As you said, this is a complex character, and
yes, because he goes through huge ranges of emotion. Generally, characters are like Mickey Mouse, or which are delightful little characters, but they go through little problems of strife and stuff. But you know, or little journeys in their stories. But Big Bird got to be a lot like the children who are watching. Some of them identified very much with this great creature who is 8 feet two, a child awfully big. I was the smallest child in my class all through school, including most of the girls. And that wasn't easy, particularly with the name Carol. And I would hear things like, Carol, you're still playing with your dolls? I had puppets from the time I was 8 years old. That wasn't easy to take, but I never played with them, and they're not dolls. And it stopped one day when this fellow was hoping to taunt me and impress the girls. He said, that the very line, are you still playing with your dolls? And I said, yeah, last week I gave a show, and I made $25, which in 1949 was a lot of money. And he said, whoa. And he never teased me again.
You talk about how you started and working on really coming to television very early, doing shows, and then in the early 60s becoming a part of Bozo the Clown.
Yes, I had my first little show, not worthy noting too much, except it was only 8 years into television in America, and that was in Las Vegas, Nevada. I was stationed there in the Air Force, so I did a little show called the Rascal Rabbit Show. It didn't even occur to me I was stealing Elmer Fudd's line, that rascally rabbit, be very, very quiet, you know. And so I called him Rascal. He was really the a puppet that my mother had built for Alice in Wonderland, which is not a very successful story with children. I learned not to do it after children didn't really enjoy it, so I abandoned this show, which my mother put months of work into. But Disney tried it a couple times, and it's never been too successful. The story is perhaps too silly for most people.
You did Punch and Judy, too.
That was my very first show that my mother built. She was from England, and she used to see Punch and Judy shows at Blackpool on the beach when she was a wee little girl. It was only a halfpenny or halfpenny to see a show. And so she remembered those shows, and when she found I was very interested in puppets. That was 1942 when I was 8 years old.
I grew up with Punch and Judy. Did audiences, were they attracted to it in this country?
Yeah, it went over very well. I started doing puppet shows for birthday parties when I was 12, and I was starting to earn a little bit of money. It was only $2 to have a show, but $2 was a lot more money then than it is now.
The documentary is I Am Big Bird, the Carol Spinney Story, this Friday, February 12th at the Academy of Music Theater in Northampton. Carol Spinney is with us this morning.
One of the things that you discuss in the documentary is that Jim Henson first saw you at a puppet show, a puppet convention, and you had a very elaborate setup. It didn't work out too well, but you had a film background. The characters were in the front, and ultimately what happened was a spotlight came down on the set, which kind of washed out the film. But it was that experience that ultimately brought Jim Henson to your door.
Yes, and it was actually good that somebody had inadvertently turned on this great floodlight. I didn't have any lights shining directly on the theater. I had built in indirect lighting so the puppets would be brightly, nicely lit. But none of the light could spill onto the screen. Because if you wash out, it was a rear screen projection. And the idea of it was that it was going to meld two mediums, animated films and live puppetry. And so I started with a production of, I picked up a nice piece of dance music for inanimate objects to dance with. So there were inanimate objects who were dancing in the theater, and then this picture fades in, and the puppets are the same they're in the film too, and so they change places, and so it gives quite an illusion of bouncing from one medium to the other, and then back and forth, and then dancing with one another. So, but everything once that spotlight was on. I had started the music with a knee switch thing. My ex-wife was not interested in puppet shows, and she refused to help. So she helped me to build the theater because she was very good at sewing. But otherwise, I had to do it by myself. So I had started the film with my knee, and that starts the projector. And I look up, and I start dancing with the figures first, and then the picture's going to fade in because I had turned it on already. And when the picture came in, I realized I couldn't see it. There was a big washed-out white spot in the middle of the screen because somebody had put on the spotlight. I couldn't figure why that was there because I'd gone to supper. It was an evening show in a big theater. Somebody had put on a light, which was nothing that I'd asked for. I guess they thought they were helping. Oh, gee, there's not enough light on this. But they realize it's a light show, so you can't wash out the stuff that's supposed to be dark and light at my plannings. And so I had to stop the tape because I couldn't perform. I have to be able to see the screen to have the puppets perform with them, and I could not see it at all. And so I assumed the audience couldn't see it, but actually they were seeing some of the puppet show, but that was on the film part. They were seeing it, but because I was at such a blank angle, my vision of it was very poor. That's the problem with rear screen projections. So I had to stop it, and I said, "Could you please turn out that light?" And it was all run by college students who were all volunteers running the theater. It was disaster. They said, "We don't know how." I said, "What do you mean? Look at all the switch lights that are on. Flip them to the off position, and sooner or later you're going to hit a switch that was the light of that spotlight and turn it off." He says, "We can't do that." "Why can't you?" "We don't know how." "Try it." You know, and so I'm arguing. But I at the time, I'm really good at ad-libbing because I knew Jim Henson was in the audience. I didn't realize he was scouting for somebody to play the characters he's about to build for Sesame Street, who had asked him to create characters that could be on daily on every show. Finally, I said, "You know, can anybody got a rifle? We'll just take it out." I got another good laugh, and so it was. I had everything was gotten out of sync because I had everything lined up. You had to all run consecutively in the manner that I had put it all together. So once it was not lined up together, it was an awful job to try to line up the synchronization again with the music and picture. I was having an awful time, and finally I got the final scene of the show. It made it a very short show, and it was a seagull flying into a dimensional forest of in a swamp with hanging Spanish moss. It was a very elaborate production. There was a large seagull, which was a puppet, and he was flying. It looked like he was just flying right into the background. And I got a lot of applause on that one. But I was still depressed, and the show ended. During my wondering what I should do next, I had gone backstage again from the front, and the audience was all there. And somebody said, "Stop!" I was walking backwards, looking at the theater, because the theater was now ahead of me. And one of the buttons they'd pushed, it certainly didn't say light, it said elevators. It was like a very elaborate, beautifully expensive theater that had elevators that would go up and down as much as four stories so you could bring up sets and things. That Radio City Music Hall was the first place to do that. When you see a show there, the orchestra sometimes is in right behind everything that's going on. It glides forward, and it sinks down into the orchestra pit in front of it. Well, that one couldn't quite do those things, but I was about to, they had opened the elevator. It was now four stories open down. The elevator had gone down. And if I had stepped another step backwards, I would have fallen 40 feet onto my back and head.
God.
Well, that would have been no show ever. And it was somebody who was a puppeteer who had asked to watch me do the show because they try to learn something by watching your work. And he saved my life, so I appreciate that. I don't even know which guy it was anymore. I was packing my stuff away after the show, and I hear this voice behind me saying, "I liked what you were trying to do." And it turned out it was Jim Henson. And he was very friendly and warm. He explained that he'd had disaster of shows happen to him, too. And he related what they were like and what happened. And so he said, "I thought you were very funny in your desperation. And you're good on your feet. So you could probably be great use for us and the Muppets. We're about to start a new show. Have you heard of it? It's called Sesame Street." I said, "I hadn't." And he said, "Well, you'd be playing two characters every day on the show for me. It'd be Muppets." And I said, "Oh, my God, I was going to be a Muppeteer." And it was like the golden moment. I was in the right place at the right time.
Carol Spinney is our guest this morning. The Northampton Arts Council will have a special presentation of I Am Big Bird, the Carol Spinney story, this Friday, February 12th, at the Academy of Music Theater in Northampton. The film will be followed by a Q&A with Carol Spinney discussing his journey and answering questions. We will continue our conversation after this short break. I Am Big Bird, the Carol Spinney story, is a documentary that chronicles the life of Spinney, the man who's been Sesame Street's Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch since 1969. He'll be at the Academy of Music Theater in Northampton for a screening of the film this Friday, February 12th, and he is our guest this morning.
In the documentary, it's beautifully animated as to how you are in Big Bird and how you operate the puppet and how your hand is above you and how there is a string that allows the hands to move. And you have a pack on the front where you are able to not only see your script, there is a monitor so that you can tell what is going on, and also a microphone that records
yes.
your voice. There is a lot going on in that costume.
But and of course, at the same time, Big Bird's head is in my hand, way above my head, and that's why he was so tall. And the head, the large puppet head, rises over a foot above the top of my hand, which is bent forward, and my thumb operates the beak. And with my little finger, I move a little lever, and it moves his eyelids open and shut, which are on little clock-like gears inside the eyeballs. That's how I do the show. But I got used to doing the whole thing that way. And the only thing was, if I did concerts with it, and I did shows all over America and in Canada and even in Australia. I would lose about 3 or 4 pounds in an hour and 10-minute shows because it's so incredibly exhausting and demanding, physically demanding. So after 8 years doing that, I decided to stop. That was 30 years ago when I was, or 32 years ago when I was 50. But I've been doing the show now for 46 years, and we're now starting on our 47th year, and I'm still with them. People who were little children when they first started, when they first were born, they were and they got used to TV. It was me who was doing it back in the starting in 1969 and the early 70s, and all through the years since. And now they have children, and some of them are grandparents. And they have children. So there's actually been three generations who are watching the same man do the same puppets all this time. Because usually, I don't think you get to be a puppeteer that has a job that lasts 47 years.
Hmm.
I've got a contract to go to 50 years, so that's pretty satisfying.
How do you like the new home of HBO?
Well, we're in the same place. What they really are the producers. In the in the manner that, of being the money, because they're the richest television system, the HBO. So they're providing the money we didn't have enough of. So now they've really saved the show a great deal, because we were struggling. We weren't making a lot of shows. We're going to have twice as many shows produced next year because of their money. They're not trying to alter the way, the manner, or the way the show is done. They're not interfering at all, other than money. It's a good thing, and everything it'll be seen. The newest stuff we'll do will be seen on only on HBO, but it will also continue to be on the same show times on PBS. But these shows will be pretty much new to the children too, because we have a lot of stuff we haven't shown for years, and that'll be used on the show. I don't think the kids will notice much difference.
And for you, the work doesn't change.
And no, the work is pretty much the same.
There is two fascinating things that I want to touch on. One is that you talk about being Big Bird and operating that puppet and being inside this bird. And really the loneliness of that, very similar to Oscar in the trash can. And that idea of you being separated from the rest of the group, which I found fascinating, actually.
Well, I disagreed with that the opinion of my dear friend Laurent Lynn, who mentioned that, I was very lonely in there. I didn't ever found it very lonely. Through the medium of television, in both cases, Big Bird and Oscar, my eyes never hardly ever leave the screen. I'm watching a monitor, and we can see. I can see the work they're doing, and I'm adding to their work or talking to them, and so I'm seeing the picture. I don't see there's really. I had watched that when I watched that. I said, I didn't have direct input on the movie, other than providing an awful lot of the footage, but they came to that conclusion on their own because they're not puppeteers doing it.
But
and
did you?
So frankly, I never thought it was very lonely because Big Bird was always associating with who he was seeing in the picture itself, and I'm just moving the picture because that was my job.
It seemed to fit into me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but especially as the show was developing, that you weren't working one-on-one with Jim Henson and Frank Oz and some of the others, because your scenes were separate.
Yeah. Well, I did an awful lot of the, the little where I would be involved for the first 3 years doing various characters in the stories where Bob would sit and tell a story or read a story, and we would act it out with anything Muppets. And I did many of those stories. And also I operated Ernie's right hand. It's a two-person puppet. It takes two people to run it properly. So does Oscar. Whereas Big Bird is just one man, me. It was it was kind of fun. And Jim, after about 2 or 3 months into the show, he announced he wasn't going to be coming in every week anymore because he was working on new ideas, which eventually you saw as The Muppet Show and various other films that he produced. So Sesame Street was opening a great door for Jim because he never had the money to do the productions until the success of Sesame Street for him.
Carol Spinney joins us this morning. He's been Sesame Street's Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch since 1969. He'll be in our region at the Academy of Music Theater in Northampton on Friday night.
The other fascinating aspect that you disclose in the documentary is that there is a young man by the name of Matt Vogel who has been apprenticing you for the last decade and a half.
Yes, he has been. And now when you watch the show, it's mostly him in it, although I'm doing the voice. I'm doing the voice of both Oscar and Big Bird, and I overdub what his movements were with the voice, and working from the script, which he is too. But it's about 2 years ago. As I'm doing the bird, it's very physically demanding, and the head is heavy. You have to hold it up with your arm. We tried holding it up with other structure, and your arm goes to sleep. You got to hold it up yourself. And so I was pleased to do that, because actually all the, when you see any movies like Toy Story or any of those sort of voices are, you know, Tom Hanks does a lot of voices on those things. And so now I'm doing it in that manner.
And it must be rewarding to think that that character will forever live on.
Yeah, it is. It's great, because the day that Jim hired me, he said, you know, we won't always be here. This was 20 years before he actually died. And I think we should try to learn each other's puppets as much as possible, so that eventually one of us will shine as to replace one of the persons who is no longer here. And, of course, he was the first one we lost, which was heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. He was a wonderful guy. He was only 53, and he had a strep infection. And he thought it was like a walking pneumonia. He'd get over it, but it killed him suddenly. Strep infections are very bad. Got into his lungs.
And from that, you learn that as other people were taking on those characters, and again, the characters lived on. But as you stated a moment ago, I mean, you really are the lasting force there of being from the very beginning to the very newest shows we see now.
Yes, I'm the only one left from the original cast as far as puppets go. Frank Oz is alive, but when Jim died, he decided to retire from the Muppets because it just broke his heart so much. All our hearts were broken, but that's the way it affected him. Once a year he comes and does a bit. He wants to keep his hand in the puppets a little bit, and he did one. You might have seen it. They showed it outside the show, because it was instead of Downton Abbey, it was upside the Downton Abbey. It was upside down. Upside down to Nambi. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
He was the butler. And he recognized his voice. He was very, I'm the, but you know, he has a deep, different voice.
He does indeed.
Several of his main characters are played by people who came later to the show. For instance, Miss Piggy, which is on The Muppet Show. And some of the same puppeteers work on the Sesame Street show, which is not actually connected to a Disney show, other than some of the puppeteers work on both shows.
Mm.
And so a nice fellow named Eric Johansson does Miss Piggy, but he also does Grover, and I guess those are two major characters, but he does a lot of other ones too. Matt Vogel, who you mentioned, was my major stand-in. He is one of the directors now, and he's also he does many of puppets. He's a phenomenal puppeteer, and he was the perfect one to add to our show. Another one who took over Kermit the Frog's voice is Steve Whitmire, who is a great friend we met. He's from Atlanta. He still lives there, but he's very busy in Hollywood a lot with Kermit, who used to be on both Sesame Street and The Muppet Show. Now he's only in The Muppet Show.
Well, the Northampton Arts Council is presenting the documentary I Am Big Bird, The Carol Spinney Story, on Friday the 12th of February at the Academy of Music Theater in Northampton. It will be followed by a Q&A with Carol Spinney, his wife Deborah, and I assume Big Bird will be there in some form?
Well, it's not I do more than one character, and I can't say it'll be Big Bird.
Okay. But one of the characters. A special guest. Well, Carol Spinney, it's a delight. I've had the great honor of seeing you at work on Sesame Street and having you as a guest on this program. It's a delight to speak to you once again. I congratulate you on the documentary and the future work, and I thank you so much for spending time with us this morning.
You're very, very welcome. I'll take this, Big Bird. Thank you very much. You were very long-winded, though. Oh, thanks a lot, Big Bird.
Carol Spinney, thank you very much. A great pleasure.
Thank you.
Again, the Northampton Arts Council is presenting a special film presentation of the documentary I Am Big Bird. It's Friday, February 12th at the Academy of Music Theater in Northampton. You can find out more at hamparts.org, hamparts.org.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMS.
Oh, Mr. Snuffleupagus.
Yes, Mr. Bird.
What's a spider, seagull, squirrel, snake, or swan?
With a Snuffleupagus, they are things that start with S.
Absolutely, Mr. Snuffleupagus.
Positively, Mr. Bird.
Absolutely, Mr. Snuffleupagus.
Positively, Mr. Bird.